Hey everyone, I'm your host Tom Shaughnessy and welcome back to Chain Reaction, a research-driven podcast that's a part of Delphi Digital. If you're not on Delphi's research portal, you're missing out on the critical analysis read by the top minds in the crypto space, so be sure to check it out. One quick housekeeping item, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. I may personally hold tokens mentioned on the podcast, and you can view our show notes below for our complete disclosures. With that, let's jump into the episode. Hey everyone, I wanted to tell you about our new podcast sponsor, LVL. LVL is releasing the first free Bitcoin exchange in North America. The LVL mobile app allows you to buy and sell Bitcoin with no trading fees or hidden spreads. With LVL, you get free Bitcoin trading, a hosted Bitcoin wallet, an FDIC-insured personal checking account, wires, checks, and direct deposits, and even a MasterCard debit card. If you use their premium account for $9 a month, you get autopilot automatic trading, chat with a dedicated private banker, and even a metal MasterCard. Check them out at lvl.co or check them out in the show notes below. Now back to our show. Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Tom Shaughnessy, and today I have on Jake Ryan, who's the founder and CIO of Tradecraft Capital. Jake is also the author of Crypto Asset Investing in the Age of Autonomy. He sent me a copy that I have. I'm going to cruise through it again while we're on the pod. Jake, how's it going?
Doing well. How about yourself?
It's good, man. I want to hear more about you, more about Jake. How'd you get started in crypto and who are you?
For those who don't know. Well, let's see. I got a degree in computer science, back in the late 90s. So I was really a part of that first internet boom. My first job out of college was being a Visual Basic programmer, having never seen Visual Basic. And I really did a lot of software development during that first internet boom. I started my own consulting firm in about 2001. And we had some big clients. I was out in Santa Monica and really was on the tech side for a long time. I think maybe 2014, I started angel investing and doing early stage investing of tech startups. Got together with some accelerators out there. And then I think it was like 2015 was the first time I had invested in a couple of blockchain startups. I think Brock Pierce had a few startups that I had backed, and I started to invest in Bitcoin maybe 2016, and really just saw the transformation and wanted to make the transformation for myself. So I did a career switch and ultimately started a fund in 2018. So.
It's crazy how different crypto was in 2016.
Yeah, unbelievable. So I think my first Bitcoin was, but I think it was like $450 or something like that. So,
oh God, I'm jealous. I am very jealous. So Jake, you published a book. Well, it's coming out now. There's obviously a lot that goes into that. You know, getting the book out there, deciding on the topic, a lot goes into that. I guess let's start at the very beginning. What gave you the idea to research and write a book on crypto?
Yeah, so that was my third book proposal. So I probably started trying to get a book deal in maybe 2016. I had written a book proposal. I had gotten as far as getting the proposal well done, but I didn't land any literary agents. And so that just died. I think the work was probably a little derivative and it just didn't go anywhere. So maybe 6 months later, I wrote an entirely new business book proposal. And I got through, I got a literary agent. So that's great. It's like I almost got there. But then she didn't close any publishing deal. And so ultimately, I never got a book deal then. And I probably waited another year and a half. And I started to write on Medium. I just started to write a lot of long form, in Hacker Noon, a lot of long form articles that were typically 2,000 words or something like that. And ultimately, I really thought I came out with a pretty long form article. I think it was Crypto's Role in the Age of Autonomy back in 2018. And I thought it could have legs. And so I wrote a third book proposal and got a literary agent, and then I got a book deal. I had two offers and then ultimately went with Wiley. So
that's incredible. And what exactly goes into that process? Do you have to give them, you know, basically, here's my manuscript? Or do you have to give them paragraphs? I'm assuming not. What is that like pre-publication, like sales cycle, like, you know, when you approach somebody with a book?
Yeah. So the book proposal will have, you know, a lot about marketing, like where does your book fit within the market? They really want authors to have platform, like how are you going to be able to get in front of people and sell books? And at the time I'd been, you know, doing a lot of podcasts, a lot of conferences, a lot of travel, starting up a hedge fund. And then you write kind of an outline and a sample chapter and then kind of an introduction. It's still about, I don't know, 40 pages, you know, for a book proposal.
Jeez.
So yeah. they really want to look at a bunch of different angles and look at your writing. And so some of it's about just having the right platform. Some of it's about knowing the right people and a little bit luck, you know, but platform's a big deal. So.
No, it's true. I want to know that it can get there and that you have, you know, I guess for them, it's, hey, this guy's got the guts to create a platform. He's obviously got the, you know, guts to write a book on it. So that's important. And Jake, before we dive into the book itself, one last question. What is the focus of Tradecraft Capital? What do you guys invest in? What's the process like there?
Yeah, so we're a crypto fund. We're a macro thesis-driven crypto fund. And, you know, what's in the book is really the investment thesis. We're multi-strategy, long biased. And then we have systems, you know, I was a software developer, so we have systems that help us, proprietary systems that we've built that help our systematic trading. So
that's awesome. So let's dive
primarily in coins and tokens.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. It's good that you're full into the space, which is important. So yeah, let's dive into the book. So I guess I hate to ask the elevator because I have a list of topics that I want to hit on, but let's start out, I guess, at the high level on the book.
Yeah. So I think ultimately this is, you know, everything is about cycles. You know, we hear about, you know, the fourth turning and these type of cycles. We hear about generational cycles. And, you know, Ray Dalio does a great job of the long-term debt cycle. And this is built on another cycle. An economist back in the 20s and another one in the 30s, Kondratiev and Joseph Schumpeter. People might know him from the creative destruction. But they really came with a framework that innovation drives the long wave cycle, the long wave economic cycle. And then I think a lot of people might know this from Carlota Perez. She had a book out in, I think, about 2000 called Technological Revolutions and Financial Capital. And she really goes into how technological revolutions drive, you know, those 50 to 60 year cycles, whereas the shorter term cycles are credit driven, like those 5 to 10 year cycles. So the thesis of this book is that a new cycle has begun. And we've seen evidence of it about a decade ago. We started to see IoT, robotics, AI starting to do more and more. A lot of companies really coming out with a lot of features and functionality around automation. And that was powerful. It just wasn't transformational. It did not ultimately change how businesses were going to conduct business. The last piece of the puzzle is cryptocurrency, because it allows humans to store, process, and transfer economic value without human intervention. And so as these four technologies converge, we're able to build autonomous operations. And, you know, businesses and organizations that don't have autonomous operations, they just won't be able to compete, because autonomy really is the ultimate competitive advantage. And so I think we're in a new, what I call the age of autonomy, a new long wave cycle.
It's incredible. And I think it's hard for people to really differentiate between those short wave cycles driven by credit and the long wave cycles that you're kind of describing, which is a massive technological kind of shift. So if those cycles are 50 to 60 years. We're arguably only, 10 years into the crypto cycle. How long do you think it will be before we get to that full-fledged age of autonomy, where basically legacy businesses that obviously can't compete with the speed of global communities and DAOs and code, because we've seen that, they're not able to compete. When do you think we're actually going to see that, real light switch effect where we have, a brand new world and it's basically the age of autonomy?
I can remember being back in college. It was like the early to mid 90s. And, we would talk about all these, it's going to be the internet and everybody will be able to, the information superhighway. And I would get to talk about all this philosophical stuff during the day. And then my job at night was to be like a ISP, like customer service guy. So these people, out in the hill country in Texas would call up and say, hey, I just bought the internet. And, the dichotomy between where we were and where we could envision. And it was so hard for many people to see where we were really going, because they could just see, wow, these people are dialing up on 56K modems. Barely anybody understands what the internet is. How are we going to get to that future that you guys are talking about? And, we used to call smartphones like PCS devices in the late 90s. So that took, 15 years before we really started to see some idea of what we were envisioning, decade and a half ago. And I think it'll be that way this time. But I really think the golden age will come, call it 2040, really where we're, where money systems and where financial capital and production capital are really on this new system. And the convergence of those four technologies really has driven the world into a whole new age.
Jake, do you think it's going to be a pretty blunt change, like a light switch where, in a matter of 6 months during some time period in the future, where a lot of legacy businesses just go out of business? Or do you think there's going to be a slow drive, for the next 10, 20 years as kind of crypto takes over?
I think it'll be a step function. It'll be volatile. I mean, it took quite a while for Blockbuster to go out from Netflix. Netflix almost died a couple times.
Yep.
Amazon started out with just books. Now it's gone up. Let's say it's gone up, 50,000% in terms of equity, but probably the only person who bought, kept the stock all that long was, Bezos and his mother. So you really just have to have that longer term time horizon. And I think it'll take a long time. But I think it'll be a step function, because there's a lot of areas that this is touching upon. We're talking about new money systems, new forms of capital and capital systems, new ways to create businesses that will operate autonomously. And that just won't happen overnight.
No, that's fair. And Jake, your book is meant for the world, not just, crypto degens and my friends, right? So what percent of the world do you think is aware of this change? Like, because I agree with you, it's going to happen. But I guess what percent of the world is aware that crypto age of autonomy is coming?
I don't know. What's interesting is, we had a conference in, this was pre-COVID, back, in January in Tulum of this year.
Good old days.
Yeah, in the good old days, back when you, had conferences in Tulum without, causing trouble. And it was really, what I liked about that conference is we weren't just blockchain people under one umbrella talking to other blockchain people. We brought in IoT experts and robotics experts and AI experts. And it was really the talking of all of those technologies together and talking about the convergence that was really interesting. And so, it's probably, a few people get it, right? I mean, people all over the tech space get it, but they might not have all the pieces in place. People on our side, the crypto side, understand sound money. They understand, how money and financial systems can be changed. But unless they were, VCs or early stage equity, they may not be seeing how some of these crypto network primitives might be used as production capital to create, new forms of businesses. So I don't know. I think it's few. I think we're really early into this. And so the goal of the book is to kind of tell some stories and hopefully keep most people in the conversation. I would say it might get a little deep in a couple parts, but I think we're really early.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And I guess the other question for you is, when you're discussing a long wave technological revolution here, you're not just talking about kind of what's going on now in crypto, where, you know, I'm paraphrasing a lot here, but a lot of this is money moving around into new DeFi protocols kind of in crypto. I think your thesis is that crypto is going to lead to kind of anonymous organizations that touch the real world. And we're not even close to that yet, in my opinion. So your thesis is that this will all touch the real world. How, what does that look like though? Is that just like, hey, I work at Microsoft and my salary is paid in Bitcoin? Or is that like, there is no Microsoft?
Yeah, well, I mean, so that's a big question, but let's start with what a long cycle might look like. So a long wave economic cycle or a technological revolution. I think Carlota Perez does an outstanding job going through the last 200 years and outlining five cycles. You know, I think it started with, I don't remember now, let's see, railroads, and then the electrification grid, and then I think before railroads were the industrial age, and then we came to oil and cars, and then finally the internet age. And so you can see how those, you know, the entire world, when we started an industrialization, you know, they were building factories and getting out raw materials and electrifying the world. And I mean, the whole world changed from that. You started to work inside companies instead of, you know, on your own. You know, railroads and being able to connect. I mean, it really did change every aspect of life. We saw that in the last technological revolution, you know, with just everybody being able to communicate with everybody and having the democratization of the voice and people to be able to connect. So, you know, it'll be like that with money and with work. But these systems are nascent, right? We're very early just into DeFi, right? So it will take some time for sure.
That's a good point. It's definitely going to take a while. And I guess my other question for you just about the book, and this is obviously a huge question, you could take a zillion different ways, but it is how you open up the book, is on kind of the history of economic cycles, the Fed. Where does our money supply, you know, where's the US dollar, where's the Fed, where do central banks play into your view on this long-term like technological evolution? Because we're thinking out in decades here.
Yeah. So again, this will be volatile and a long period of time. I am not of the mind that the US dollar is going to lose its world reserve currency status anytime soon, because there's nobody that really can take it over.
I'm with
technology
you there.
Will play a big part of that with CBDCs and with China's DCEP. But all those really still are in visionary phases. You know, there's not really much implementation, though I think China has done some preliminary, you know, testing. I think we've seen a few phases of monetary policy. You know, we kind of had the Austrian age where we were much stricter with the money supply. You know, rehypothecation could only do maybe up to four or much more limited. It was much more constrained. And then obviously after 1971, we got more into the Keynesian and we saw much more, you know, explosion of debt, having, you know, the Fed really play a bigger role and expand its balance sheet. And now we've heard of late, especially after 2008, kind of the modern monetary theory. And the idea of, you know, really pulling apart U.S. treasuries or creating debt and just having the monopoly of money by the United States used as an asset of the state. And so we're still in the first inning of that new era of modern monetary policy. Though that's been going on for a while, we really haven't like decoupled the printing of money or the creation of bank reserves from, you know, from the bond creation and the treasury. So this is new, and we probably have a long time in this era before we see some of the cracks that we're just talking about today.
No, that's fair. I guess the hard part for me thinking about this theory is I totally agree with you on the revolution. It's just from an investment perspective, it gets hard because, you know, our views last year have changed. Our views from, you know, 6 months or 6 days ago have changed. Like DeFi, crypto, it moves so fast from an investment perspective that it's really hard to think out, you know, decades when you have to deal with, you know, minute by minute changes in medium posts and governance and things like that. What do you think is the best way, or what do you go into in the book about, I guess, the case for investing in crypto, the frameworks to look at, and kind of have that longer term view? It's frankly really hard to have a macro view in kind of this micro world.
Yeah, I think every investor has to have, you know, a position on whether we, you know, where we are in the cycle. You know, are we in an inflationary or deflationary or disinflationary cycle? Where are we in that cycle, and have a position on that? And that has to drive kind of the initial investment thesis. And when things change, to be able to work, to be able to know what happens when those changes happen. I think a lot of the financial services industry right now is feeling like in the not too distant future, we're going to see more inflation. I'm not necessarily sure that's, we may be in the end of that deflationary cycle still for a bit longer, you know, we'll see. But I think first you have to have kind of a position on that. I think as a crypto community, we've done a good job explaining why Bitcoin as sound money would be advantageous as a hedge against, you know, it could be digital gold or as a hedge of, you know, monetary manipulation or just adding diversification to a total portfolio. So I think we've done a good job there. I think some of the work we have yet to do is what is beyond Bitcoin in the world of crypto that has value. And, you know, that's a hard case because 5,000 or 10,000 crypto assets have been, you know, built over the last, you know, decade, and, you know, less than, I don't know, 1% or something really have any value. So it's important to create some frameworks of thinking about how a crypto asset would create value and how a crypto asset would accrue value, and then have a thesis of how these could be used in the future. And really having those frameworks are going to help drive good decision-making about what you invest in and what you don't.
It's a really good point. I'm glad you brought up value creation versus value capture, because a lot of the token models we design and look through for our fund, I mean, it's a similar thing. You know, you could create a lot of value, but if you can't capture it, it's not investable. Jake, what are you thinking on the long-term investment horizon in the crypto space? Do you think that, and again, it's so hard in this space to forecast, but are you thinking that a lot of the mining will be spent still at the base layer, Bitcoin, Ethereum, up the stack in DeFi, or I don't know what would come after that, but I guess, where do you think most of the time will be spent?
For investors or developers?
Investors.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think VC, more venture style investment versus, you know, institutional investment will be spent probably in more of the platforms and governance tokens, because I guess you can think about over really long periods of time, a store of wealth is going to be logarithmic, right? It's going to make more of an R. And so as Bitcoin and other crypto assets gain more market share of the store value, it's going to start getting limited. Whereas production is more of an exponential curve. You know, it's a J going up. And there is not really a cap on what you can produce. And so over long periods of time, talking about decades, asset allocators are going to want to be in the production and in assets that are helping to generate cash flows. And so I think those both balance, and it really depends on investment horizons of the investors. But institutional investors are just getting their feet wet with Bitcoin. And so, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum will probably be, you know, on the financial services industry radar, or specifically Bitcoin, for probably the next coming quarters or so.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting answer. And I guess just zooming back out again, just to the process, what was the hardest thing about writing this book? Like, is it a personal thing? Like, you know, it's just a lot of work, a lot of research, or is it, you know, deciding what topics to not include? And it would be really awesome to hear from you, you know, what you think will be most shocking to people when they open the book. I mean, when I read it, you know, and checked it out, I mean, I just love that you have such a good focus on, you know, not only the history, but also all the different aspects of crypto, from, you know, value accrual to accretion, like we talked about, to DAOs and governance, all the way up to, you know, how to invest in the space. But sorry for the long-winded question there. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, let's see. This started in 2018. So imagine in crypto time, trying to distill concepts over 2 years and still have it be relevant. I mean, things, you know, can be open a week, right? So, you know, that was one layer. You know, another layer is running a crypto fund and writing a book. I think I gave myself only 8 months to write the book. So, you know, I think I had to deliver 830 words a day or something to stay on target. You know, that with COVID and a three-year-old, you know, it was just a lot of juggling. But probably the hardest part is really, it is the organization. How are these concepts going to be organized, and what order? And then thinking about how you're going to tell this in a story. Like, nobody wants to read a reference book. You know, you got to write this in a relatable storytelling fashion for it to be at all interesting. So that just takes time to think about. And so that was probably the hardest thing. I don't know. Writing, I don't know if I ever want to write under a deadline again. I think if I ever wrote a book again, I would just write a book and then see if they want to publish it. Writing under deadlines, hard.
Well, though, it's funny because everybody asks me all the time, like, I'll talk to legacy finance friends or, you know, just normal friends, and they'll be like, look, is there just one thing I can go to? And, you know, just to understand crypto and the cycles. And it's kind of funny. There really aren't that many easy go-tos that cover everything.
Yeah. Well, I like, you know, if it's like somebody who's really new to Bitcoin, you know, Jimmy Song et al., you know, his little Bitcoin book's really good. You know, if somebody's really wanting to know Bitcoin, obviously Safe's book's, you know, awesome. So yeah, well, we'll see what people think about this book.
That's awesome. And I guess, when does the book actually launch? I know I have my early copy, but yeah, I think I got my copy before you said, right?
You got your copy before me. So, it comes out December 22nd. So you can pre-order on independent book sites or on Amazon.
Awesome. Yeah. So just go on Amazon, search up the title. So people just search crypto asset. Can they just search Age of Autonomy just for memory sake?
Yeah, or crypto asset investing would probably get it. Yeah.
Awesome. That's cool, Jake. No, I'm excited, man. I want to see people's reaction. I can't wait for people to get it and read it. I'm definitely going to give it another read over Christmas break if my partners give me some time. We'll see what's going on then. But Jake, thanks so much for coming on, man. I appreciate you diving into this with us.
Absolutely. Good to see you again. Talk soon.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.